Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Get a podcast of this radio show on SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcasts. You can listen to it statewide across the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network. I appreciate the affiliates in Eugene, Fox Sports Eugene, KORE, and Klamath Falls. Of course, people listening in Portland and Salem and Corvallis on 750 The Game and streaming it at baldfacetruth.com. Rob Mullins is the athletic director at the University of Oregon. He's been busy. Love having him on the show over the years. He's joining us now. Where are you right now, Rob Mullins?
I am in my home office, John. Good to be with you. How are you doing? I hope you're safe and healthy.
I'm in my home office as well. And I'm good. I don't have any complaints. Like, how often are you getting into the actual office? Do you miss that interaction?
Definitely miss that interaction. I try to get in there once or twice a week, obviously, under the direction of the campus. If we're able to work remotely, they want us to, but there's a few things that I need to get into the office for. So we kind of rotate, and I take my turn on the rotation when it's available.
How this decision that went down this week, and, you know, it feels to me like student-athletes were put first, that the conference really did view the athletes as students who are in the care of the universities. How much did that factor into what we saw this week?
That's exactly what you saw. You nailed it, John. From the beginning, our presidents and chancellors were clear, as were the ADs, and we were all aligned on the health and safety of our student-athletes was going to be the priority. And when we created the Pac-12 Medical Advisory Board with the infectious disease experts and the public health experts and then pulled in cardiologists, to get the best information available to make a decision. It's a really, really difficult decision, but it was the right decision, and I appreciate the leadership and how it was managed.
The conversation you have with your football coach, I mean, this was going to be a big fall for Mario Cristobal. I think it was lined up. That could not have been a fun conversation to say, Mario, doesn't look like it's happening. Like, how did that go down?
Well, I mean, obviously, we've been talking daily, multiple times daily. Even coincidentally, I would be on a morning run and he would be on an early morning walk because you know how early he gets up. And occasionally our paths would cross in the morning and we would stop there and spend 45, 60 minutes breaking it down again. But we talked multiple times a day about all the modeling we were doing, about all the protocols, about the procedures. And you're right. I mean, he loves his players. He's a football coach, his football coach. And, we were building to something special. And this is a special group. It is gut-wrenching to have to, tell them that we're not going to be, playing in the fall, that all competitions are going to be postponed. And, I went with him when, he visited with the team to share it. And, they were numb. It's a really, really difficult decision. But, again, I think Mario has been incredibly supportive all along to our medical team, to all of our staff in setting up the protocols. Our student-athletes have 100% bought into everything that we were doing. And it's just disappointing that we don't get to go to the next phase. But everybody understands that it was the right decision.
How does the athletic department withstand, the typical Pac-12 athletic department, not just you guys, withstand what will be the potential of, $50 to $60 to $70 million in lost revenue? How do you make up for that hole in the budget?
It's a work in progress, John. That's a big hole. And, you know, that's exactly the range that we're going to be in. We're going to be somewhere in that $50 to $80 million range of trying to solve. And, you know, we're looking at a number of things. As we talked about, I think the last time I was on, we had already made some cuts in that, you know, we had to unfortunately furlough about 10% of our staff. We had to do 10% across the board budget salary cuts, a number of operating budget cuts. We've frozen positions. And we'll have to continue to look at other things that allow us to make it through this gap. And, you know, also we want to be strategic about it because we want to accelerate out of it. And somewhere in there, we're probably going to have to figure out a way to borrow some sum of money to help bridge that gap. And, you know, that'll create some challenges for us on the other side of this. But it's survival first and then accelerate out.
Rob Mullins with us, athletic director at Oregon. How important is it? I've heard from some of your season ticket holders that the tone of their email is almost, I'm staying with them. I want to help them get through this. How important is it for you to create or foster that kind of mood with your fan base?
Well, we wouldn't be where we are today on the cusp of having another great football season and another great athletic year without our passionate fan base. You know, we're so fortunate to have a passionate base that really embraces, you know, providing an exceptional student athlete experience and really has rallied around this broad-based excellence that, you know, we're able to compete for championships in just about every sport. And they're so knowledgeable. I mean, not only are they passionate Duck fans, but they're knowledgeable. They understand how it works. And the support that we've received for our student athletes, for our coaches, for our staff throughout this, you know, we've done donor Zooms, we've done happy hours with coaches on webinars. The way that our Duck fan base has really embraced, you know, our student athletes, our staffs, our coaches, and said, hey, we're going to get through this together. The theme has been high care factor, and together we will find a way, and we need that now more than ever.
Rob, the Ohio State game, everybody was looking forward to that. Can you get that game back? Have you talked at all with Ohio State?
Yeah, we have talked to Ohio State. Here's you know, this is another piece of the gut punch. We're probably going to have the best fall home football schedule in the history of Oregon football. When you look at the home games that we were going to have in the Pac-12, you add in a North Dakota State, and it's my understanding they had orders for about 8,000 tickets from their ticket office, and we had only put 3,000 tickets in the contract. So, you know, North Dakota State and Ohio State were going to be hard sellouts with passionate crowds. So, you know, that's tough. But we are in conversations with Ohio State on, you know, what are the options. Unfortunately, in the short term, neither of us have openings. But we'll continue to see, you know, where the moving parts come from the postponements of this fall and where we can and schedule. We did that game a number of years ago. Everyone was so excited about it. And we're going to do everything we can to try to find a way to fit it back in some way, shape, or form.
I know that I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you play in the spring and the Big Ten plays in the spring, could Ohio State and Oregon still happen, or is that off the table as you see it?
Yeah, you probably do know the answer to that. You know, I don't know the answer is the honest answer, but the likely answer that I'm sure you were thinking about is that if you're going to play in the spring, and we'll begin discussing these models, you're probably going to be looking at a fewer number of games. And my guess is that it would probably start with a conference-only schedule because, you know, we want to be able to do it in the right way. And I don't think you could do 12 games and then be ready to play again in the fall of 21. So it is highly unlikely, and the more likelihood is that we'd be looking at kind of a smaller number of conference-only games.
I know that you've got to have 16 sports to stay sort of in the division that you are in college athletics. Is it possible that you'd be looking at cutting any of the sports, or right now do you feel good about where you are as far as the sports?
I hope not, John. I mean, that's one of the toughest things. We only have 20 sports, so we have 20. And, you know, we've built a great infrastructure, and those 20, you know, we feel really good about the leadership that we have in each and every one of those. You know, we've brought fantastic student athletes to the University of Oregon and to Eugene. The last thing we want to do is impact their experience in that. So we're going to do everything in our power to avoid that. And I think we can find a path. I sure hope so.
You know that I'm a little bit of an idiot on air, and so I would tell you if I thought Michael Schill was not a great leader, but he came on yesterday on this show, and he hit a grand slam home run. I mean, I think he was smart. He connected. He's engaged. He cares about kids. You can tell that he's a sports fan, or he's trying to grow as a sports fan. What's it like to work with him?
It's been great. You know, it's great to have his leadership on campus. For me, as a direct report, you know, he's available 24/7. He always offers sound advice. He's there to bounce things off of. You know, he cares about the entire university. He really has grown as a sports fan. I mean, I think you probably saw the way that he really embraced the women's basketball team and built his knowledge base. You know, when I first sat next to him at a basketball game and there was a technical foul called, he was asking me, "What the heck's going on? Why isn't everybody lined up?" And now he's wanting to know why Kelly didn't call the pick and roll on a key possession. So he's come a long way.
I love that. Rob Mullins is with us, Oregon Athletic Director. What do you miss about sort of the work environment that you had pre-coronavirus? Is it seeing people or what is it?
It's just the energy. You know, we all choose the profession that we're in because there's just an energy about it. There's such passion when you work in college athletics because you want to support the students. And, you know, when you're in a college athletic department on any day, you're bumping into coaches, you're bumping into student athletes, and there's just all this hallway office conversation that happens organically. And you can step out to a practice, or you can step into a weight room, or you can step in to the academic center, and, you know, you just don't have that, you know, that casual interaction that provides so much energy, and I miss it.
You got a chance to do a Zoom call with your football coach, Mario Cristobal, and this becomes your life. You know, you have to, you know, come on this radio show and you sort of explain the position. What do you need your Oregon fan base to know moving forward as you begin to sort of sort through the spring and what happens to college basketball? What do you need fans to know?
Just that we're working and grinding every single day. To find a way, first and foremost, to continue our exceptional student-athlete experience. That's why we're here. We're going to continue to support these student-athletes. And also to know that our coaches have been at it. You know, while there have been some restrictions on how they can go to the office, what our coaches, our football coaches, our men's basketball coaches, our women's basketball coaches, and our entire staff, what Mario and his staff and Dana and his staff and Kelly's staff have done on the recruiting trail in the remote environment is just amazing. You know, they are still working at it. They are still working at loving on their student athletes, making sure that we're supporting them the right way. And yes, we have some significant hurdles, but we are working every single day to find a way over those hurdles. And that when we come out on the other side of this, of making sure that we build on what's taken, you know, 10, 12, 20 years to build here. And we want to make sure that we maintain that and continue the trajectory.
I'm watching some of the criticism of the Pac-12, I think, is really rooted in the idea that some of the other Power Fives decided we're not ready to make a decision. That you may ultimately end up in the same place, but what do you say to people who go, "Hey, Rob, like, you know, they're committing to, why make the decision now? Why not wait in 2 weeks, call the season off?" What do you say to those fans?
I'd say, you know, we made a commitment at the beginning that we were going to put the health and safety of the student athletes at the forefront. And we've had numerous conversations. And, you know, first we delayed, we delayed the season. We delayed every stage of, progression in the practices. We delayed the start of volleyball and soccer, moved back when the basketballs could start in their summer workouts. So we've just been following the data, been following the science and the advice of the medical advisory board. And it just came a point based on three things that our medical board said, hey, with the prevalence of community spread in our communities right now, in all of our communities, with the emerging concerns around cardiac issues that we just don't have answers to, combined with, number three, you know, there's just a lack of availability of point-of-care rapid response testing, we just don't see a way that we're going to be able to have competitions, contact, in the fall. So, you know, we want to provide clarity for our student athletes too. This is a very uncertain and anxious time for our student athletes. And while, you know, it's a difficult decision, you know, when it came to the point where the information pointed to what decision wanted to be made, the leaders made the decision. And I respect that and appreciate it.
College basketball, you know, President Schill talked about, you know, January 1st and beyond. Scott Barnes yesterday talking January 1st and beyond. Is that kind of where we are? Best case scenario, college basketball might, may, could start January 1 and then you work out from there, or where do you start?
You know, I think that's, you know, obviously with the decision that the Pac-12 presidents and CEOs made, you know, I do think that's possible. When we're looking at, you know, the three things that I mentioned, hopefully we see a reduction in the prevalence of the spread in our communities. We get some more answers around the cardiac impacts. And really, if we can get to, you know, some availability of point-of-care rapid result testing, you know, maybe we can do some more things. Hopefully, we get to that here in the fall, and maybe we can build a schedule whereby we get to practicing in a safe manner, and then, you know, really, you know, focus on, you know, the earliest possible start for, you know, maybe some basketballs and maybe even some of these fall sports being rescheduled. So, yeah, January 1, and if, you know, if by some miracle something better happens, maybe we can revisit it.
The decision that some of the outgoing juniors and seniors may have to make is that, you know, hey, the Rose Bowl may have been my final football game. You know, some of those guys may elect, even if there is a spring season, to just say, look, it's too risky for me. That's going to be a tough decision. Would you offer any advice to those kids, or do you stand with them, or what do you do as an athletic director?
We 100% stand with them. You know, our counsel all along is to get the best information that you can get, and we're here to help you get that information. And then, you know, rely on us. Let's have conversations. We always want what's in your best interest. And this is where our coaching staff is great. So, you know, hopefully we can help them in getting that information. And for us, it's always about what's best for them. Listen, it's, you know, Penei Sewell may be the best left tackle to ever play at the University of Oregon. Would love to see him, you know, suit up again. But we want what's best for Penei and his family always.
Rob Mullins, I appreciate you making time for us. I know you're busy. Thanks for popping on.
Thank you so much, John. Good luck in that home office. I hope you don't pace it like I pace mine. I got to have a new carpet here in about a month.
You take care. Those morning runs, that's got to be weird to run into Cristobal. Like, do you guys plan that, or you just live?
It's crazy. You know, we live somewhat in the same neighborhood, but multiple times I'll be finishing and, you know, we just happen to be on the same street. And every time, you know, I'll get back home and my wife will say, wow, you went for a long run. I say, not really.
You think Mario's stalking you maybe? Like he's going, all right, I need to talk to Rob.
No,
I'm going to hang out down the street.
It's purely coincidental. I think we're just two crazy people up early running.
What time in the morning is that? Like, give me an idea. What are we talking
about?
You
know, it probably ranges. On the weekends, it might be a little later. But during the week, it's not too crazy because it's daylight out. But, you know, it's probably 6, 6:30, somewhere in that range.
Bless you guys. Good for you. All right. Take care, Rob. Appreciate you.
Thanks, John. Thanks.
All right. There's Rob Mullins. He's the athletic director at Oregon. Can you imagine that? Okay. You're the AD at Oregon. Of course you're living in a similar – I mean, I can't think that there's too many neighborhoods that, you know, the athletic peoples tend to generate or gravitate towards each other in a college town, living in close proximity. But you're Rob Mullins. You're out for your morning run, 6, 6:30 in the morning. Here comes Mario Cristobal walking, interestingly. And you spend 45 minutes to 60 minutes standing on the corner talking about what's going to happen. Love that. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network. My teenager doesn't have her driver's license yet. She'll have it soon. It's been tough with the DMV. If you have a teenager who's dealing with trying to get the DMV test during the pandemic, that's brutal trying to get in. And I've told this story before, but I'm not sure that I've told it fully on air. What the DMV started doing was the DMV made a decision that it was going to take appointments online. And I don't know if you've tried to get into the DMV lately. It's hard enough when there's nothing going on. But the 17-year-old in our household who has had the driver's training course just needs to take the written test. So I got online on the website with her, and it asked for contact information. It needed somebody 18 or older to take the phone call. And what we ultimately signed up for was that the DMV would take that information, then they would call you back. When they had somebody in their office, they call you back to schedule an appointment for your kid to come in and take the driver's test. So, you know how important your driver's license was to you. It equals freedom, right? Alabama Adriana, can you remember getting your driver's license?
Yeah, I remember it being a huge process too, though. I had to take, I think, 3 or 4 different trips to different DMVs with different documentation. It's really a process.
Really a process. And so what happened was all of it, and I don't answer my phone if I don't recognize the number. That's another thing that was going on. But what happened was I missed the first call from DMV, and I happened to be on air. I saw the phone ringing, didn't recognize the number, not going to answer it. So I let it go to voicemail. And of course, I got a message from DMV that said, hey, we're trying to schedule a call. This is our first of 3 calls that we will make to you, we will call back. Now, what stood out to me in that message was 3 calls. Wait a minute, they're only going to call me 3 times? And if I don't get it, then we don't get the appointment. And I got a 17-year-old looking at me like, come on, Dad, come on, why didn't you answer that call? You know. So the bottom line being, second time DMV called was also during this radio show. And I let the call go to voicemail. And the lady, the nice lady, I have the voicemail. I would play it on air, but it basically just says, hey, this is so-and-so from the Department of Motor Vehicles. I'm calling you as a courtesy. This is my second of 3 calls. I will only be calling one more time. You want to think about pressure that I had as a dad? Because I'm driving around, like, giving this person rides, you know, love the kid. I could see how important her driver's license is to her. And I happen to host a radio show from 12 to 3 where I'm really not available unless you happen to call in a commercial break. So I took the number that DMV was calling me from, and I put it in my phone as a contact. And I put it in as DMV answer so that it would pop up. As, you know, not a unrecognized number, because it wasn't recognizable to me, because I guess their offices are out of Salem, but who knows what phone service they're using when they call me. So, sure enough, it was about 10 a.m. on a morning a few weeks ago that the DMV number popped up. DMV, now, in my house, I also get terrible phone reception in certain areas, and my phone calls will drop. So I hustled over to the area of the house that I think is most reliable. I answer the call. First thing I tell the lady is, hey, I get bad phone reception. If this call drops, you call me back. And she says, okay, I will. I don't know what happens if you miss that third call, but next week, the 17-year-old is going into the DMV to take that test. And I'm thankful for that. A lot of pressure off me. I answered the call. I got it done. Thank you. Parents everywhere. Fist bump, elbow bump, whatever we're doing these days. All right, 2 o'clock hour, final hour of the show.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.